Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for March 24th, 2008, and on this episode we have an interview with playwright Horton Foote and his daughter, Hallie Foote. They will be talking to Tom Williams about a trip to Bountiful and the Horton Foote Festival going on at the Goodman Theater. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago, and let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. We have two special guests this week. One is the legendary stage and screen playwright Horton Foote and his daughter Hallie Foote, who is an actor and a member of the family. I have to start out by, I have a quote from the New York Times about our guest Horton Foote, and the quote is, "A Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright and Academy Award-winning screenwriter, Horton Foote is known as the Chekhov of small town for his subtle, life-affirming stories about ordinary people. Now, 92 years old, he continues to be one of the strongest, most individual, and abiding, relevant voices in American theater." Welcome, Horton, and congratulations.
But I want to thank you for that lovely quotation.
Well, everyone who has been here at the Goodman Theater for this festival of your work has just been overwhelmed.
Well, the Goodman has been awfully good to us, too.
Yes, they have. And tell us about Trip to Bountiful, which is the current show that's running through April 13th, which is the last part of the festival. I thought it was one of the great pieces of theater that I've seen in the last few years.
Well, your opinion really is much more desirable than mine right now, because you are the audience. And what we're trying to do is to bring a play to life. And I leave myself out of this because I'm no part of the directing or the acting, but I think it's superb.
Yes, and Lois Smith is absolutely marvelous.
Can't beat her.
Yeah, she and the lady sitting next to you, hello, Hallie, plays. Hi. Hi. You and your husband are in the play also, and you have certainly helped carry out this festival with the play. I thought your performance was outstanding in the play, and your husband was very strong too. It's such
you.
A tight, beautiful piece.
Yeah. It's a wonderful play, and it's over 50 years old, and I think it'll last for a very long time.
It's
kind of a timeless.
I agree. It's certainly an American classic. Well, Horton, let's go back to the beginning, because you have such a story to tell, and if I had 5 or 6 hours, I'm sure we could fill it up with this. But I definitely want to do some of the highlights. I mean, you've been writing now for over 70 years.
Don't tell me. I
mean,
I don't keep count.
You don't keep count. That's great. Well, tell us how it started, because I know something happened in 1927 when you were in high school about you getting the calling. Tell us about that. The calling to be an actor?
Oh, well, it's a very mysterious thing, but when I was that younger than that, I was 14 or 15. I used to take walks with my parents, and we'd pass this house with a very distinguished gentleman sitting on the porch, and he'd say good evening, and we would say good evening. And when we got past the house, my father would always say, "That's Mr. So-and-so," and he was working in the fields of cotton in Alabama, and he got a call to come here to preach. And the word call stuck in my head, and I wanted to know all about a call. And I said, well, I knew he was a Baptist. I said, "Can only a Baptist get a call?" "No, honey, a Methodist can get one, Episcopalians can get..." And they went on down the line. But I meditated over that and thought about it a great deal. And when I was a year or so older, I got a call. It wasn't to preach, but it was to act.
It was to be an actor.
Yeah.
And how did your parents react to that in the tough times during the Depression?
Yeah.
I mean, even now, I have friends of mine that get into acting, and their parents go, "Oh, my God, I wasted the education." You know, they still are against it. How did your parents react to
that? Well, they reacted normally. And I must say, finally, with very goodwill, and have said, if that's what you want to do, we'll help you.
Fantastic.
And they sent me off to dramatic school.
Yeah, at Pasadena Playhouse. And it kind of, in part of the festival, it came back in the actor, the one act
yeah.
that you wrote in 2002.
Yeah.
So that is your story then.
Well, that's a dramatization of my story.
Okay. And it was an absolutely marvelous play. So now you're in Pasadena Playhouse, and then you end up after you get graduated from, you end up going to New York.
Yeah, that's where all the actors went in those days.
Yeah, and you got involved with what you call them, the Russians.
Yeah.
Tell us about that, with Agnes DeMille and some of the other people in that time.
Well, Agnes DeMille was the one that suggested that I write. We were doing improvisations on a project for her, and I was always doing improvisations about Texas. And she said, "I think you should write." And I said, "Well, what do I do?" She said, "Write about what you know." And I took off on that and wrote a one-act play and then a three-act play. And the critics were kind, and I was on my way.
But I understand that some of the original stuff, you were acting in your own plays, right?
Yeah, for the first two plays.
For the first two. And I understand that one of them used real names, and then when you went back home to Texas, some of the people got a little aggravated.
Yes, I learned not to do that ever again.
But so you, after the first couple of plays, and you decided strictly to be a writer.
Yeah.
I heard one story that said that you got real mad that you all stayed up all night until the reporters came out with the reviews,
well,
and
that
you
was
were
the second,
and you were mad because they didn't like you, or the actors, but they loved your writing.
That's right.
They didn't like one actor, and that was my father.
I didn't know that. Okay, thank you for the honesty of that. That is.
Don't give away our secrets.
Yeah. So now you start writing. And one play after another, and then you hit television, the days of television drama, the golden age of television, which a lot of people didn't realize that there was so much being done live. There were live plays that were live television, and you wrote a number of those, right?
Yeah.
And from what I understand, a lot of them, they wanted them shorter, so you always liked the one-act format.
Yes, I did. I liked writing one-act plays. And in those days, you couldn't give them away. Nobody wanted them. But when I began working in television, it seemed to me that the one-act form would fit wonderfully. And we had to stop for commercials, but that's all we had to stop for. And they generally could be played without the commercials.
And then, of course, one of the key ones that happened in 1953 was Trip the Bountiful.
That's right.
So that was originally a one-act, am I correct?
Well, I wrote it as a one-act.
You wrote it as a one-act.
And then I made space for the commercials.
Okay, and Lillian Gish played in it, correct?
Yes, she did.
And I understand that it was so critically acclaimed that the Broadway producers came to you and wanted you to expand it and make it into a full two-act play for Broadway?
Well, it wasn't the Broadway producers. It was the producer of the television show, Fred Coe.
Oh, okay.
And he wanted to do it, and then he got to the Theater Guild, and they co-produced it with him. But he was the one that started the project.
And it all happened in the same year, right, 1953?
Yeah.
Which, you know, in today's market where everything takes 2 or 3 years to develop, I mean, you guys just really could crank these things out, and once it was an idea to do it, you just did it, right?
Well, we were welcome. You see, they wanted our product. Because there was all this time to fill in television, and they were not used to that, and they didn't plan ahead because no one knew anything about television.
So they didn't know how
to. When I first was part of television, I was an actor, And I was in a hall not much bigger, not as big as this, and one camera. And they said to me and the girl I was doing the play with, you don't have to, you can't forget, the camera can't move. You have to come in and exit, come in, enter.
And I didn't realize that the cameras couldn't move.
No. So I thought to myself, well, this is a dying industry. You can just forget it. But they found other ways to do this.
So that must have been quite a challenge for you then.
Well, it scared me to death.
Did they, in those early days of television, did they just accept what you wrote, or did they give you like an outline?
Oh, no. Just I wrote.
Whatever you wrote, they put up?
Well.
Pretty much.
If anybody objected, I heard nothing about it. I didn't handle the sponsors. Fred Coe, the producer, handled them.
Well, you can be sure that if you weren't writing what the sponsors want, you would have heard about it. So obviously you were giving them the kind of product that people wanted to see. Because I'm old enough where I remember as a little kid seeing a lot of those live shows. The Playhouse 90, Philco, U.S. Yeah. Steel Hour, Goodyear. Yeah, there's a bunch of the major sponsors, and those were terrific. Well, then you had a breakthrough when you did the screenplay for Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes.
Tell us how that happened, because I got to say, I read the book, and everybody of our generation has read the book, and the book is beautiful. But what you did with the play was better, with the film.
Well,
the screenplay, it just was more powerful.
Well, I don't think you could really go wrong with this, with the book.
But what you did. Now, tell us the story how Harper Lee turned it down, right?
Well, she didn't want to do it.
She didn't want to do it, okay.
And she didn't know me, and I didn't know her. But when I just said I would do it, they got us together, and we liked each other a lot. We're still friends.
Terrific. Well, I understand that once she accepted that you were going to do it, and you two were comfortable with one another, then she didn't want to deal with it until you had it finished.
Yeah. That's right.
Wow, that talk about trust. and of course she loved it.
Yeah, she did.
And it won a couple Academy Awards. Gregory Peck got Best Actor, and you got your first Academy Award for it.
Yeah.
How did that change your career?
Well, in all kinds of conventional ways. You know, I was offered films that I really shouldn't have been offered, and I shouldn't have done them. But I learned a lesson. That you have to pick what's right for you.
But it opened quite a few doors for you.
Well, if the kind of doors that were not very important to me at the time.
I had heard a story that when you went back to Wharton, Texas, after winning the Academy Award, that you were quite a celebrity in town.
Well, I think I was. Yeah, briefly.
Yeah, well, that's always cool. And then another... As you kept going, Bountiful, of course, was made into the stage play. As great as it was, and after the acclaim of the television show,
yeah.
That it only lasted like 40 performances or something because of the newspaper strike.
It was a drastic newspaper strike.
And at those days, you needed the newspaper.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. But then you were offered, you had many offers to do for people to get the film rights.
Yeah.
And you held back for a number of years.
Well, because they didn't want Lillian Gish. And they felt she wasn't commercial any longer. And I felt that she was the spirit and the soul of the piece. And that it was her performance that had intrigued so many people, because it was the telephone calls from all over America right after the show ended. And mostly about her.
Oh, that's terrific. And it started a trend, one of the trends that I've really grown to respect you as a professional is your loyalty to actors and people who you know can justice to your work.
You'd be a fool not to. I mean, your life depends on them. I mean, a bad actor, not only bad talent, but a bad disposition... And it can cause chaos. And but directors and actors, I think I'll pick pretty good ones.
Well, You certainly have. But as you know, many projects, many films or plays that are well written, all of a sudden they think they need a name. We've seen many plays go down the drain and films get ruined by poor casting when they think they have to have the big names.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying I appreciate and the actors do so much that you stick with people you know that are known quantities.
I want to, and I always try to.
And which brings up the question. You're very hands-on on your plays and your films. You go to the rehearsals. You go to the on location. You've always hit. How much do you get involved really in the productions? Are you more of an observer, or do you get involved?
I keep my mouth shut.
Do you really?
And when I want to say something, I say it privately. I don't say it out loud.
Okay. So, which is another, as you know, is another rare trait. There are some playwrights and writers around. I've heard some amazing stories. How they'll scream and holler and throw things at the actors, and we've all heard those stories.
Yeah. Well, I don't do that. I have opinions, but I think the thing is that you better do your homework, and if you've worked with them together before, because then you know very sure. And I've had wonderful associations.
Well, which brings up Robert Duvall.
Yeah.
You had quite a bit to do with his career, with some of your screenplays. And Tender Mercies is one of my favorite films. And he did such a great job. Can you tell us how that story, because that was your second Academy Award.
Yeah.
And I had heard correct me if this is not true, that this was a play that they came, a screenplay that they came to you and they asked you to write?
No.
No?
My agent wanted me to think of an original, and I did. And but we couldn't get anybody interested.
Is that right? And this is a story about country music and an old country music musician, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Bruce Beresford, way in over in Australia, who I'd never hardly heard of him and never met him.
Oh, Breaker Morant. Yes, right. That's right.
And that's what got it for him, because I saw that and I just loved it. And
so you sent it to him in Australia?
I didn't, but the producer.
Your producer did. Okay.
And he said that he loved it so much that he only, when he finished only half of it, he went to the phone and said, "I'll tell you, I want to do it." He was afraid some American was going to get in there.
Wow, that says a lot. He hadn't finished the script. He had read enough to know.
Yeah.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, Hallie, I've got to ask you some questions now, and see if we can sort of blend this in. I cannot remember doing any research on any playwrights where the entire family is in the business. How does that work in your family? I mean, you're an actor. Horton Jr. is an actor. Daisy's a playwright, and Walter's a director. Do I have the? And your husband is an actor.
Yeah. Well, Walter is really now kind of he's a lawyer, pretty much full time. But he has made a film. You know, he went and did it. So he's certainly been involved. And my brother Horton is now has two very successful restaurants. He just couldn't take the life of an actor, and I don't really blame him, because it can be kind of hard.
Yeah, the rejection. Yeah.
But my sister writes, and you know, she's had a lot of success. She just had a play done a little over a year ago at the Cherry Lane Theater in New York.
Terrific.
Yep. And she's got a movie, I think, that's being developed at the moment. So
now tell us how this gentleman had to influence the whole family, because how often a famous man who's, you know, at the top of his game, the kids are either jealous or whatever. It just doesn't seem to work out.
I'm going to tell
okay.
you.
Okay.
Daisy had a play done at Primary Stages, which I directed, and Hallie played the lead.
Fantastic. That was, you just scooped me on the question. Have you ever done a project where everyone was involved?
Well, that's
that's close. That's close. Pretty strong.
That is,
and you directed it.
Yes.
How many of your own plays have you directed through the
years?
Not many. Okay.
But you, you did one. He did one called Night Seasons.
Yeah.
And you did The Roads to Home.
Yeah.
And those were quite well received. And then My Sister's Play.
Yeah.
Tell us, Hallie, how what inspiration did your father give you to be an actor?
He never really gave me any.
Okay.
Huh. I mean, no, our family, we have this kind of, we had this sort of normal family. I don't mean that if your parents tell you to act, it's not normal, but he was not very interested in, you know, he just wanted us to figure out what we wanted to do, and he never put any pressure on us. And so we lived in New Hampshire for, we like away from New York and away from California, and he would go out and, you know, he'd get writing assignments and he'd leave and do that, but I went to college. I didn't really know what I was going to do until I was about 25, maybe a little younger.
Was it intimidating to have a famous father like this who's so well known and had the success he had?
It's never been for me. I can't speak for my other siblings. Okay. I don't know. I think everybody has their own.
Mm-hmm.
But my father always made me feel like I could do anything I wanted to do. So that's all you can ask from a parent.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on that. That is. I was lucky enough to have the same kind of supportive parents. Yeah.
My mother was the same way. So.
Yeah. And your wife was also a producer.
Yes, she was.
So everybody in the family was involved. That is only in America.
Well, they were all interested, and so we. And I'm one of them all, really, to go into the business.
You did?
Oh, yes.
But you were laid back enough and enough of a father to...
Well, they were very independent children, and you wouldn't do a bit of good. They had to find it for themselves.
Well, that's probably why they found it, because you didn't try and do... You know, because I noticed when you hear read the biographies of famous people, so many of them either push their kids too hard in it, Or don't want them. You know, either way, it's a negative experience.
Well, I remember the day she called and she said, "Daddy, I have to tell you something. I won't be happy until I try acting."
What was your response to that?
I was delighted.
You were delighted.
Yeah.
Terrific. And, Hallie, how tough was it to be in your father's plays? You know, expectations, you know, with directors and people?
I don't know. It sounds crazy. I just never felt that pressure, you know, that like I was having to live up to anything. Or I love his writing, and so that it was always wonderful working on his things, you know. It's always been, because I think his plays are very important, and I think they're wonderful for actors to work on.
Yeah. Elaborate on that a little bit for us, because the actors I've talked to doing your father's work, they just absolutely love it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's real people, and it's...
Well, they're very rich. You know, there's lots of layers to them. You can kind of constantly explore when you're working on a part. You don't ever get bored, you know.
Well, it certainly shows. And they're very subtle.
Yeah.
Audiences, once audiences tune into them, and particularly the shows that they picked here. By the way, I have to ask you, did you pick these plays that the Goodman did?
No.
Who picked them?
Well, I think Bob.
Bob Falls picked them?
I know he picked. He didn't pick Bountiful because it was produced and the director that told him about it.
Well, you had to do that. If you're doing a Horton Foote Festival, I would think that that play has to be there.
I think that came after he decided to do Bountiful.
Okay.
And he decided to make it a festival. And then he picked the other plays.
Okay. Are you happy with the plays he picked?
Oh, I love them.
Yeah, I think it's a nice cross-section.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about Talking Pictures. Because I thought that was more than a play about, the loss of Talking Pictures, about the change in American society from the 20s to the 30s.
Well, it's turned out that way. I don't know that I... exactly planned it, but it certainly is relevant for today, isn't it?
Yeah. How did
Again,
you...
The changes going around us.
It certainly is, and what I like about is one of the traits of your writing is not only the local color. I mean, you represent small-town America, as well as anyone. And some of my English friends said when they think of America, they think of your plays.
Really?
Yeah. How's that for? Yeah, and it's so true. And, you know, I'm a city kid from Chicago, but my other reviewer is from Arkansas, and he's a small-town boy, and I tell you, he had tears in his eyes at the end of Bountiful, and he said it just spoke to him. Mm-hmm. And I got that reaction from a lot of people.
Good.
So you must be happy with that. Well, I understand that, of course, you're still writing, and you have a new play, Dividing the Estate,
yeah.
That's going to open in New York?
It's not a new play.
Okay.
How old is it?
It's over 20 years old, actually.
Oh, okay. It's one that was not produced, or is it?
It was done at the McCarter, and it was done at the Great Lakes Cleveland. Is it Cleveland Playhouse?
Yeah.
And then in Alabama?
No, in North Carolina.
No, it wasn't in North Carolina?
North Carolina.
Okay. I thought it was Alabama.
What a memory, huh?
Yeah.
You have a fantastic memory.
But, yeah, it was done before, and then they almost moved it to New York. Well, first it was going to go to Washington, right? The Kennedy Center.
Yeah.
But it fell through.
Okay.
Roger Stevens died.
Okay. And one of the other plays that reached me strongly was The Young Man from Atlanta that won the Pulitzer for you.
That started out here.
Yes, it did. That's where I saw it.
The old theater.
Yeah, I did see it in the old theater. And I don't remember, unfortunately, I don't remember it as much as I should. I'm hoping it comes back to the Goodman here.
It's the next
probably,
Horton Foot Festival.
Pardon?
It's the next Horton Foot Festival.
Okay, thank you, Denise. So tell us about that play, The Young Man from Atlanta.
What do you want to know?
Well, a little bit of the storyline, because it had quite a cast. I know Bob Falls directed it.
Yeah, yeah.
And
Rip Torn,
and winning the Pulitzer had to be a very
good. Well, it actually won the Pulitzer before we came here.
Okay.
We won the Pulitzer. It was done first in a small theater.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it got the Pulitzer.
Okay.
But it was recast when it brought here. And then this was the production that went into New York.
It did go into New York?
Yeah.
How well did it do there?
Very well. Got wonderful notices.
It did?
Didn't run as long as it should have run.
Well, let's hope that's coming back, that the dramatic plays can have a run.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in New York, it seems to be so much the big spectacle musicals.
Now it does.
Yeah, yeah, but regional theater's been really kind to you, hasn't it?
Oh, they've been wonderful.
I always ask this question, everybody, and I have to throw this out to you. What do you consider to be your major artistic achievements? I know it's a tough question because you've written so much and so much great stuff.
My major what?
Artistic achievements. One of the things you're most proud of as a writer.
No, I was just going to say, he always says it's like saying, who's your favorite child?
Oh, okay. Okay.
Well, that's what I would say.
All right, well, I'm not, I know I would never, I know it's an unfair question to ever ask you, like, what's your favorite play? You know, because generally the answer I get from playwrights is the last one they wrote, or they like them all.
Well, I'll tell you.
I'm just saying the ones you feel most proud of.
Well, the thing I'm involved with right now, it's, and I wrote a 9-play cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And there looks like there's interest enough to get a production of the 9 plays.
Wow.
And that would be very unusual.
Yes, it would. Is there any deal made, or is it still?
A handshake.
Okay. Well, I would think you would consider that a deal.
Well.
Because I have a feeling if I did a handshake with you, you'd come through at your end of it.
My work is done, practically.
Mm-hmm.
It's just thinking of it in terms of.
Is this this isn't the miniseries that you got the Emmy of? Oh, that isn't The Old Man. It isn't that?
No.
Which series is it? Because you did start a couple of series, didn't you, of plays?
No. These individually have been done. We did them as early movies.
Okay.
When I was working but there are 9 plays that are written, and they belong together. One goes into the other.
That sounds like something for a theater group, you know, to spend a season on, or maybe 2 seasons.
Well, maybe.
Boy,
They want to do them like, you know, the Coast of Utopia, or it'll be a 9-hour event.
Oh, like a Nicholas Nickleby or Coast of Utopia
right.
type thing.
And they're called what, the Orphan's Home Cycle.
Boy, that's, I hope that hits Chicago.
I hope it does too.
Hallie, are you going to be in it?
I don't know. That's this one I don't know.
Okay. So tell us now how, in casting, how much do you get involved in the casting of these shows?
Oh, yes, I do.
You do?
Yeah.
I mean, are you one of the, you make
because
one
it's
of.
It's life and death.
Okay. Because I know a lot of playwrights, you know, turn it right over to the producer or the director.
Well, not this playwright.
Okay, terrific.
Because I've been around for a long time, and I think I know a lot about actors and certainly directors.
Terrific. So that's when people license your work or ask for your work, that comes part of the deal.
I think it's understood.
Yeah, very good, because I respect that. And the word I've heard from a lot of actors is they respect you, too.
Yeah. Well, I'm very pro-actor and pro-director, pro-everything.
Pro-everything. How about pro-audience?
Yes.
It's got to make you feel good to be sitting in the back of the audience and seeing the reaction to your work.
Yes, it is.
And I guess it from what people have told me, tell me if it's true, every night it gives you a thrill.
Not every night.
No?
That's a legend.
Okay.
But I'm here a lot.
You're here a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the director can't be here.
That's true. The director's usually...
He had another job before he took this.
Yeah. Well, Hallie, how is it... Does he critique you?
Yeah.
Yeah?
You know, if I ask him, or sometimes he'll say, depending, I guess, if you're directing me in something, he'll tell me things. And he's always there to give me advice. If I ask for it, and sometimes if I don't ask for it. But it's always constructive.
It's always constructive.
Yeah.
You definitely give off that impression. And that's rare in the playwrights, because so many of them that I've interviewed are just so tough.
I haven't really had that problem, but I've heard stories.
Yeah. Yeah, we all have. Of course, your career is a lot more than just your father's work. Tell us some of the other plays that you've been in that you've enjoyed.
Done, you know, quite frankly, it pretty much is my father's work.
Okay.
I mean, I've done a lot of his things, and I mean, I've done other things, but I've done my sister's things.
Okay.
But that's just sort of the way it's fallen for me, so.
The New York critics say she's the definitive interpreter of my work.
Yes, I have read that. And how do you feel about that? Do you think you are?
Oh, I don't think so. I think there are lots of people that get his work. I think, you know, his work is very accessible for actors. So I think if you find an actor that, if his work resonates with them, it's not hard to kind of do his plays.
All right, let me ask you a tough question now. What are some of your favorite roles of your father's plays?
I don't know. I've liked all of them, you know. It's kind of like the one you're working on, I guess, at the time.
Well, in Bountiful, you play kind of a witch.
Yeah,
she's tough.
People think that. I don't think that. I think she's just somebody that's, you know, trying to keep her family together.
You really think that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think she's sort
on
of
one in, level, yeah.
In a very, they've sort of been on top of each other for 15 years.
Well, and she knows he's weak, the husband, right?
Well, I don't even think that. I think he hasn't been well, and I think they haven't had a lot of money, and I think her mother-in-law keeps trying to run away. And, you know, I think she's, and I think Jessie May is not what you call diplomatic. She sort of speaks in unedited ways that I don't think serves the family so well. Maybe that's her biggest problem.
Okay.
But I try to, I guess that's my way into her.
And it comes off, it comes off so well. It's do you think she's doing okay?
Yes, I do.
What, let me ask you this now. What do you think is Hallie's best performance? Some of the...
Oh, I could keep here all night.
Okay.
Yeah, there's so many things of mine that I just She's very different.
Yeah, it's the intensity that the whole cast brought to Bountiful was amazing. And your husband has also done a number of the plays with you, too. Am I correct?
Yes, yes. And he's going to be in the one that's going to Broadway, too. So we'll get to be together for that.
She'll be in that, too.
You're going to be in that, too. Great. Yeah. Well, isn't it great when you can have family in it? And it isn't nepotism. It's because they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they were all in the production that was done off-Broadway.
Okay.
So their work spoke for them.
Yeah. And again, like I said, that is so real. This has been terrific. I could go on for hours. It is. I just want to congratulate you on being one of the great spokesmen for rural America and for the American experience.
Thank you.
I think that when the annals, in 50 or 100 years from now, when they're writing the textbooks on the 20th century, you're going to have a chapter.
Well,
I really believe that. And let me ask you this: what have you had? What is yet to be written? Because I know you're not going to retire.
Oh no! Well, I couldn't. If I told you, it'd be the curse of death.
Okay.
I don't think you should talk about it.
Okay, but you still have. There's still plays in you that have to come out.
I hope so.
Terrific.
Yeah.
And Hallie, do you think he's going to keep writing?
Oh yeah, he writes. You know, at the drop of a hat.
Fantastic. My last question for you, Horton, is: what advice would you give to young playwrights?
Write about what they know.
It certainly served you well.
Yeah.
So if they're inner city kid, they should write about the inner city.
That's right.
It has served you well. And I've heard this before, but then you start seeing writers writing, you know, fantasy stuff about what they don't know.
Well, you don't know what that source is.
Mm-hmm.
That may be the source that feeds them.
And what about education? What would you recommend?
Adapting?
Yeah.
Well, only do things that you like.
Ah, that's important.
Yeah.
So not just for the buck.
Well, that's everybody's solved that in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not criticizing that. That's very inspirational to a lot of people.
Yeah, it keeps the wolf from the door.
Yeah.
But you think it's important that they write what they like and only take projects that they're really interested in.
Well, I'm only saying from my experience.
Okay.
I've broken that rule a couple of times, and I've regretted it.
Okay. Well, that's sound advice, because I have met a number of unhappy writers who don't like what they're writing, and they're actually pretty good at it, but you'd wonder how good they would be if they really loved what they were doing. Yeah. So I think that's great advice. And you still see the shows. You're in town here. You're going to see in Bountiful a few more times?
Oh, yes.
Great.
I've seen it a number of times.
That is so terrific. So, folks, when you see this gentleman in the back of the theater with the white hair and the great smile, with that real pleasing look on it, say hello to him and thank him for a great night of theater. And thank you so much for the interview. And
thank you.
You are a legend, and we really appreciate your work. I just absolutely loved all of the productions that I've seen of your shows.
Thank you.
And folks, thank you so much. Make sure you get to the Goodman before the 13th of April to see Trip to Bountiful. It is one of the great pieces of theater. And remember, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of March 24th, 2008. Chicago Shakespeare Theater's Artistic Director Barbara Gaines and Executive Director Chris Henderson have announced the Chicago Shakes 2008 and 2009 season. It's 10 productions full of rivalry and revelry that comprise CST's ninth season on Navy Pier. The season includes Much Ado About Nothing starting on June 25th, Willy Wonka will be opening on July 8th, the curtains go up on Amadeus, that starts on September 6th. The Troublesome Reign and Lamentable Death of Edward II, that starts on October 1st. A Midsummer Night's Dream warms up on November 25th, while Macbeth opens on December 31st of this year. The short Shakespeare version of A Midnight Summer's Dream launches on January 24th of next year. Sweet William can be seen on February 3rd. Twelfth Night begins on March 29th, and this is, of course, of next year. Tickets are now on sale for all of the productions, including season subscription packages. For further information on Chicago Shakespeare Theater productions and to purchase tickets, visit www.chicagoshakes.com. Or you can read the detailed article at Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. The Chicago premiere of Shout, the Mod musical, opens this spring with a limited engagement at the Drury Lane Theater, Water Tower Place. Shout is a fast-paced journey through the infectious and soulful pop anthems and ballads that made household names out of stars like Petula Clark, Dusty Springfield, and Lulu. It's described as an Austin Powers-like musical, and it's a journey about five women during the liberating days of the 1960s that made England swing. The first edition of Shout appeared on stage in New York back in 2000, and then the show was transferred to London, where it was nominated as Best Musical by What's On Stage. Shout, the Mod musical, will be playing the Drury Lane Theater Water Tower Place from April 30th through June 22nd. Tickets are available at the Drury Lane box office, or you can find out more information at our site's Coming Soon section. Artistic director Robert Falls announces two more plays to the Goodman Theater's upcoming 2008-2009 season. The first is Rock and Roll by four-time Tony Award winner Tom Stoppard. This show will be directed by Charles Newell, who, as you may know, is the artistic director of Chicago's Court Theater. The next show is The Crowd You're In With by Rebecca Gilman. This one will be directed by Wendy Goldberg. She is the artistic director of the National Playwrights Conference. The Goodman production of each of these plays will mark their Midwest premieres and also give both directors their Goodman Theater directorial debut. Robert Falls says that these two new additions nicely complement the rest of the season. And also, word has come down that Brett Nevue's new play, Gas for Less, will be opening at the Owen Theater on this upcoming June 2nd. This will be the final play of the Goodman Theater's current season. Click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section to read a detailed list of the Goodman Theater's 2008-2009 season. And we'll see you there. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So until next Monday, that is the Theater News from Talk Theater in Chicago. And I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Horton and Hallie Foote for giving us the honor of interviewing them this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.